Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
A Century of Modern Art is Auckland art gallery Toyo Tamaki's latest exhibition, surveying a century of visionary and influential painters who transformed modern art. Exhibiting the likes of Claude Monet, Edgar Degas, and Vincent van Gogh, and premier examples by pioneering artists of the American and European avant-garde, A Century of Modern Art is an extensive collection of 57 works by 53 artists. The exhibition takes the viewer through the evolution of modern art through key defined art movements, beginning with the Impressionists of the 1860s, making its way through movements such as Post-Impressionism, Symbolism, Cubism, Surrealism, and Abstract Expressionism. These works revolutionize the Western modern art and continue to inspire those in the present. I had a kōrero with co-curator and senior curator of international art, Dr. Sophie Matheson, about the show and working with the Toledo Museum of Art to bring this collection to Tamaki Makaurau. A Century of Modern Art is exhibiting works on loan from the Toledo Museum of Art, Ohio, and you co-curated the exhibition with Curator of American Art at Toledo, Erin Corrales-Diaz. Can you tell me a bit about that relationship first and how the exhibition came to be and took shape?
Well, it started off, as many travelling exhibitions do, as a checklist that we received. And very often you just judge a show by the quality of what's in it. There were no details particularly about the themes, about the significance of each work, but it was absolutely obvious that we had an eye-popping array of works right across the show, from its beginnings in the 1860s right through to the 1960s. It's a century span. And so when you have that sort of amount of quality compressed into an exhibition of 57 works, you just really look forward to how it's going to sort of shape up. And it was quite a long way down the track before we actually knew what the themes were that the curator in Toledo had in mind. And even then, it was quite schematic. So I just worked with those themes to help write the labels and to flesh out some of the thematic texts on the walls. And then I took it from there, really, in terms of writing room brochures for our general public. I'm responsible, really, for translating a theme that's arrived to us into terms that are really relatable for New Zealand audiences. So it's my knowledge of local audiences that helps to craft the show and those final texts that appear on the walls, in the audio guide, in the brochures, in the advertising, etc. So it's really two minds working together on the same checklist. And luckily, I think we've followed a fairly straight down the line sort of story about the development of avant-gardes in the 20th century. And so we were never in any dispute about the basic parameters, the basic facts of this historical story. If you were to pick up a book that just encompassed a century of modern art, you could really just rely on Toledo's knockout pictures to sort of to cover it, because their institution was founded in 1901, and they didn't inherit a ready-made collection from anyone, like a private collection. They inherited instead a significant seed corn funding to go out and buy the best of the best. And so they're really starting their collecting roughly at the same time that the avant-garde was kind of invented, and roughly at the same time that that those paintings from France were arriving on the American market. So they were buying adventurously from early on, and with this idea that they had the money to sit back and wait for the best of the best to come along, they really didn't try to be comprehensive, to sort of infill all the little gaps with lesser works. They've just cherry-picked what was the best of what was available. And what we've ended up with, following 130 years of their collecting, is really a very, very handsome array of knockout works. And they also had directors and curators who had the boldness to buy very modern art, even when it was not popular among the museum establishment. So they've really done some very visionary collecting, and it's a reminder of how hard it is for other institutions now to play catch-up. So we are looking at some extraordinary Mondrians and Monets, etc., that were bought in relatively early days, and it's a really great credit to Lido Museum of Art that they basically bought according to their convictions and their eye and not according to local taste because they were buying ahead of their time.
And these shifts in artistic expression represent a shift towards more personal reflection in the artist's practices. Would you be able to speak to how the social and cultural changes are reflected in the evolution of art practice as artists shift direction and made bolder changes to their style, as can be seen in this exhibition?
Absolutely. And you see it right through the show from beginning to end, but the show does open in the second part of the 19th century, and that's really the tail end of Romanticism. The personal, private, subjective feeling was very important to creativity. You know, if you think of Chopin and the Romantic musicians, well, and poets and writers. So the artists, the Impressionists, really did paint according to their own sense of truth and authenticity. So we already see in the very first room little landscapes along the beach, say by Caillebotte, of insignificant little buildings on the coastline, and yet these are immensely important to Caillebotte, who loved the sea and loved the regattas and all of the water sports in summer in that area on the Normandy coast. Things have personal significance. They're also painted in a very modern style, and the two things come together beautifully again and again. And we see it particularly in the second room, where there are Impressionist portraits, and they're almost always of lovers, of childhood friends, of nieces, nephews, etc. These are people who are very close to the artists themselves, and what is irrelevant is social status, money, wealth, all of the general signifiers. Portraits do not have to be of people who are perfect looking or are significant in society. And so, again, you're plunged right into the private world of the artist. Then in the next room, which is, we call it re-envisioning the world, that's about the artist's private idea of an ideal world. And so we see Monet's beautiful personal vision of the water lily gardens that he planted and created at Giverny, that he never really leaves, that he's created his own paradise. We see the world of rural France that Van Gogh liked to think of through the idea that he was getting back to a primitive and more pure kind of humanity. We see Tahiti, which his friend Gauguin saw through very, very rose-tinted eyes as well, glasses as well. So we see these sort of paradises that artists were striving towards, and they are not very closely connected to reality. In fact, they're an escape from modernity. And so that's very personal, and we can see it in the colours too. They've escaped from naturalism, and we're getting these beautiful bronze purples and pinks and oranges and aquas using all of the modern paint colours, the aniline dye colours. So suddenly things become a little bit technicolour and very, very personal. And realism has vanished in the process. And the next two rooms are really about how the avant-garde and how Cubism and Impressionism sort of freed everybody else up to approach familiar subjects in new ways. So we have two gorgeous rooms of one of based on the human figure and how it gets broken down into twisted and fragmented little bits and pieces as artists tried to make personal comments about humanity in the world in the light of terrible events like the First World War or earth-shattering theories like psychoanalysis. So modernity has really come up and grabbed people by the throats by 1910 or so. Mm. We see it in this room, broken down images of the human figure. It's tremendously exciting and bold. The classical figure, the boring, staid classical figure of human perfection has gone. The accompanying room is about landscape and still life. And again, artists have completely re-envisaged both of these familiar subjects with modern eyes. So we see it in the palettes, we see it in abstraction, we see it in these fantastic bold colours and strong lines. And these are very personal visions. And it reminds us of how Pizarro told young artists, don't go looking for new subject matter. Look at the familiar subject matter through new eyes, and we see that in this room. And it's star-studded, this little still life room. It's got Morandi in there, Pizarro, Paul Klee, Yves Tanguy. It's hard to know where to look. Braque, a superb wartime Braque. And then if I can just quickly skip through towards the end.
Yeah, perfect.
We see how many of those avant-garde artists have to really scarper to America with the Second World War. So Second World War comes up with a shock. It wants to turn back the clock. Fascism wants to turn back the clock of the avant-garde. It's become very unsafe for Bauhaus artists and experimental artists to continue working in Germany. Increasingly, it becomes unsafe for them to continue working in Paris. And so we see this scramble as all sorts of artists and art institutions in America attempt to effectively airlift or spirit away some of the great talents from old Europe and into the New World. So we see people like Josef Albers from the Bauhaus, or Mahori Naj from the Bauhaus, or Mondrian from Paris. Not much English between them. And they're suddenly pitched into New York and North Carolina and these little places, teaching academies. And they start to teach what they know to new generations of American artists. So from that point onwards in the show, we still see how America takes on firsthand from these emigre artists the principles of things like abstraction and starts to interpret their own world in America through these principles of abstraction, so that abstraction stops being a sort of a foreign phenomenon associated with outsiders, communists, etc. It loses a lot of those associations, and it becomes a sort of an Americanist apple pie sort of phenomenon. And so we see the shift across to abstraction through artists like Anne Reinhart, Helen Frankenthaler, who invents sort of colour field painting. And the final room is really about the story of how those American artists had shed the painting of objects and had moved to pure abstraction, and then start to come back from the brink of abstraction and start to play around with the figurative again. And so we end up with a sort of a reconciling. The figurative comes back into abstract painting, and so we end up with a last room, which is almost a sweeping survey of the very great abstract painters, the very great colour field painters like Morris Lewis, and the birth of pop in Robert Rauschenberg. So it's an absolutely sweeping story. It's very hard to tour, to guide through a story like that in, say, an hour. I struggle because we're looking at so many major moments and so many major players.
Totally. I can imagine that would be very difficult to take on. But as we're talking about this, you know, I think what's so striking about this exhibition is it is such a great educational exhibition on art history. And there is, you know, you could talk about it for hours. There's so many stories that come out within these works and within this evolution that this covers. What do you think is the importance of an exhibition of this type being held in Tamaki Makaurau?
I think it's fantastic for us here in Auckland, because we've got the Robertson Gift in an adjacent gallery, which is this wonderful act of philanthropy that brought 15 great modern masters to our gallery and has transformed our gallery's collection, has transformed the gallery's status in the world. But now we have a chance to sort of we've been living with some of those stories about the rise of the avant-garde in the last year or two with that show that's up. And it's free. And now we have a chance to sort of delve into other examples and other facets of the similar story. And so we're sort of getting this wonderful new chapter where you can go from the Robertson Paths to Modernity show across to the Toledo show. And we're also looking at really the best of the best. And it's a tremendous thing to see superb examples. It helps us to keep our eye attuned to you know, what we might like to collect in the future, what we might aspire to, or why we can't, you know. But for me, it has really forced me to... I'm trying to think in terms of being very, very strategic about how we add to our own collection. we may not be able to afford a superb Max Beckmann German expressionist, but we might find something small, or we might, but also a wonderful example. And so it helps us to be strategic. It also helps us to stay connected to the world of international art museums, because it's actually getting more and more expensive to travel. We're doing it less often, and we have a new generation of young people who do not assume that they'll head straight to Europe or overseas the second they finish a degree or the second they finish school. COVID and cost of living has changed our expectations, sadly. And the role of a museum like ours is to bring the world to Auckland in the meantime. I think it's very, very important. Also, I think it's great that we have this conversation with great institutions across the world, because not only do we learn a lot about them, they learn a lot about us in the process. And people from Toledo are realising that we've got these superb collections of New Zealand art to be tapped. Mm. It's a conversation that will just keep going. I'm hugely into this idea of internationalism and exchange, cultural exchange. I don't believe in putting up cultural walls, and I say the more exchange, the better. We live off that sort of, it creates possibilities for all of us.
I feel like that really nicely leads on to my last question, because this exhibition marks the beginning of a series of exhibitions at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki in the coming years. How is this exhibition influencing the direction of the gallery and its focus, particularly for larger international shows?
Look, I think this is a taster of things to come. I think we should be getting used to having wonderful offerings, particularly in the winter season, to look forward to. And I think that we are building up erudition, familiarity with great artists and great examples by them. And I think that the important thing is it helps to shape our expectations. We shouldn't regard this as a one-off. We should assume that there'll be a constant stream of shows of this calibre, and we will be aiming to bring, you know, quality and variety to Auckland every year. It's amazing how difficult it can be, and how much effort can go into staging one particular show. There's so many things that can get in the way of a good programme, a good forward programme, but I think that Aucklanders deserve it, New Zealanders deserve it. I can't think of too many institutions across New Zealand that are doing what we're doing, and I think that we should be flying the flag for these great cultural offerings.
That was Senior Curator of International Art at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki, Dr. Sophie Matheson, speaking to me about the gallery's latest exhibition, A Century of Modern Art. The exhibition is on now until the 28th of September 2025.